Going Linux, episode number 199. Computer America, number 59. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Whether you're new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, Computer America.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. Computer America is heard around the world and coast to coast. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
Okay. And welcome into a Tuesday edition of the Computer America show. And it is the third Tuesday of the month. And that means it's our all Linux show! Okay.
That is, you know, despite the little cheery in the background, it is one of our fan favorites.
Yes, it is. It is. It's a huge favorite. And that's why we continue to do it, because, you know, Linux, let's face it, it's the alternative operating system. And so many of you may have heard of it. So many more of you may not have heard of it. But, you know, if you want to find out more about it, well, this is the place to be, you know, especially on the third Tuesday of the month here at Computer America. So, let's introduce our guest. I know he's waiting patiently in the wings. I guess our virtual wings. They're not really wings, you see. But as I said, it's the third Tuesday of the month, and that means it is time for Linux. And Linux operating system continues to become more and more popular. It's an important operating system, so every month we devote an entire Computer America show, both hours, to the subject of Linux. And if you have a Linux question, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. Joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Hey, Larry, welcome into Computer America. How are you?
I feel like I should have a big cheer at that Going Linux podcast. Yes.
There it
That's
is.
That's it. That's what I was looking for. I'm doing great. You know, it's always a pleasure to be here to talk about my favorite subject, Linux, for 2 hours.
Yes.
I mean, what better conversation could there be?
That's right. Exactly. And now, we always encourage our listeners to join in. And we do a number of things to have you join in. And what we want to explain is that we have open phone lines, and we have open vectors into the Computer America show, so you can kind of join along with us. And the way that we do that is in several different ways. First of all, I ask Larry to pick a topic for the show each month. It's just a general overall topic, and it leads to an interesting conversation. But I want to let you know that at any time, you know, you can interrupt us. If you have a question about it, we'll stop what we're doing, and we'll talk to you and answer your questions about Linux. It could be on the topic that we're talking about. It could be something related or different. As long as it has something to do with Linux one way or the other, we will entertain your input into our show. Now, the topic that Larry has picked tonight, and it's a little strange, it's a little odd. It is
yes.
The oddest places you'll find Linux. And 10 of the oddest Linux distributions.
Yep, it's a twofer tonight.
It is. And a distribution, of course, is a various flavor of Linux that we might explain that. But basically, that's the topic. Now, before we get started, let me just explain one other thing. Larry gives us, each time he appears here, matter of fact, most all of our correspondents do, they give us what we call cheat notes. And these are basically, it's sort of a guide of things that we're going to be talking about. Sometimes in the guide, he'll put links, or he'll put, sometimes pictures are in there. It all depends what we're talking about. Well, we have a cheat sheet from Larry, and that's what we're going to. And if you want to follow along with us, we make it available for you to do so. It's real simple. Just go to computeramerica.com. Under the archives pull-down menu, you'll see our show notes. Okay, just click on that. It'll open up our show notes, which is a WordPress document, and you'll see Larry Bushy doing Linux. And there you will see a link. And the link, well, let me see. Is it a link or is it the actual, is it, how did you do it this time?
The show notes themselves, they're all there, all the links that we will be talking about, all the topics and whatnot. The show notes are up there on the show notes just like any other night.
Okay.
But we have a link right there at the top for emails, and those will be for the second hour.
Okay, and if you click on emails, it'll actually open up another Google document, and you'll actually see the very page that we're talking about as well. So we make that available for you, our listeners of Computer America, so you can kind of follow along with us when you listen to the show. Nice feature. Okay.
Yeah, and this is going to be a follow-along show, too, so check them out. we're going to walk you through some websites here.
Yes, exactly. And again, so instead of you trying to scramble and write them down, we have them. You can just look at them. You can go right there. It's all at our Computer America show notes. You can see everything that you need to see. And it's up there for you. It's in the show notes. And as we do the emails, we have a link to that one. You can see that as a Google Docs document, which you can save, too, if you want to, for later on. Okay. So let's get started. We're going to do the oddest places you'll find Linux and the 10 oddest Linux distros. Where do you want to start, Larry?
Well, we'll start. Well, first of all, the Linux operating system seems to be everywhere these days. I changed my my mobile phone plan with AT&T just yesterday, as a matter of fact. I wanted to be able to do some tethering from my phone, from my tablet, my Android tablet, of course, to my Android phone. And so I changed my plan so I would do that. And in the instructions they give you on the AT&T site, where they tell you how to set up your phone, but also how to set up your computer if you want to tether to your computer,
right,
it says, well, if you have these old versions of Windows, you need to do this extra setup, and you may have to download a driver. But if you've got a modern version of Windows or a Mac or Linux, in particular Ubuntu Linux, you don't have to do any setup.
Ooh,
and I thought,
nice.
We have made it. AT&T has us in their instructions.
Welcome to the real world. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so that's not an oddest place, but you'll find it more and more because it's becoming more and more popular.
Yeah.
But there are some unusual places you'll find it. And many of the places you'll find it are not on a computer desktop, but rather embedded Linux. And we have a Wikipedia link to the to the definition of embedded Linux, but essentially it is where the Linux operating system is embedded in a computer system like a mobile phone or a PDA, right, if you still see those around anywhere,
which
media player or set-top boxes,
which
consumer devices.
Which reminds me, by the way, Ben and I did a news story about a week ago, and we said, Larry's going to get this. We talked about this new mobile phone that has Linux. What was it, Ben? It was a Linux operating system. Was the actual?
It was Ubuntu.
It was Ubuntu.
I remember that much.
It was Ubuntu. It was a Linux phone and had Ubuntu, right, Ubuntu built into it. I don't know if you've seen it or heard about it.
I have heard about it. In fact, we were chatting just a few minutes ago in the chat room about it, and the Ubuntu folks, the folks who bring you Ubuntu desktop Linux, have brought out a version for a phone, and from what I understand, they're planning on actually providing hardware, a phone with Linux, Ubuntu Linux pre-installed on it. It's not Android. It's not a version of Android. It's actually Linux, and it's Canonical, the company behind Ubuntu, is developing this version of their operating system to run on a phone.
Wow. Okay. So now, by the way, you notice how I mentioned that if we have questions or people call in, we're going to kind of interrupt what we're doing and go to the question.
Yeah.
Well, that's happened in our chat room. We have a question for you. Steve from Far North Palm Beach.
Far North.
Yes, has got a question for you, and we'll tackle that when we get back, and then we'll continue on some of the weirdest, oddest places you find Linux, and you would not believe some of the places where you'll
find
it.
It's not just after a fight either.
No.
I'll cram this computer.
This is Computer America on the Business Talk Radio Network. It's our All Linux show. We'll be right back. Stay with us. 21 minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com, our email address or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Larry Bushy continues on with our All Linux Show, and we're going to just stop what we're doing because we have a question for you, and it's from Steve from far north Palm Beach, and he asks this question. I have two legacy programs which only run in Windows XP, and I want to continue to use them. They will not run in Windows 7, and they will not run in XP mode. So I need to dual boot on this machine to use these two old programs. Here's the question. Larry has explained Wine in prior episodes. Which Windows applications run in Wine under Linux? Asking this because there is no one Windows. I have all sorts of Windows, 3.1 and Windows XP programs that I can no longer use, although I only want to run two of them. So it's all sorts of programs that will run in Windows 7. So he needs some help. What would you say to him, Larry?
Okay. So specifically, he's asking if there's a place he can go to find out, or some advice he can get to find out whether the programs that he will run that he wants to run will actually run under Wine. And before we answer that, Wine is actually a layer that goes on top of Linux that allows Windows programs to think that they're running in Windows even though that they're running in Linux.
Yep.
And so with Wine installed on your Linux computer, you can also install some Windows programs and get them working. Now, not all Windows programs. Mm-hmm. So where do you go to find out if your Windows program is one of those that actually works, and how well will it work if you do get it installed? Well, there is a website called WineHQ. It's winehq.org, W-I-N-E-H-Q.org.
Put it in the chat.
And they have an application database there. And so if you go to appdb.winehq.org, you will go right to that application database, and it lists and rates Windows applications by how well they run under Wine. First of all, will they run, and then how well will they run? It gives you tips on getting, as Steve has found out after looking at it, it's some tips on how to get those some cranky applications to run under Wine. So there's lots of good advice there, and it's a great place to go to find out if your Windows application will run. And I have to say that Steve is so far north in far north Palm Beach that he's almost in New Jersey.
That's really north.
Yeah.
Far north of Hawaii, yes, exactly.
Far north. Okay.
And I put the two links in the chat room, too, so he can check them out.
Perfect.
I don't know if Steve is actually listening to the live show. He may be, but just in case, it's there. So, also, Jack Death in there made a suggestion, too. He said that he said the dual boot is not required. He says if it won't run in Wine, play on Linux or a DOSBox, then go with VirtualBox and put your Windows XP in it. So,
yeah. Yeah, if it's a really old Windows program, DOSBox might be fine because it essentially just emulates DOS. So if it's a Windows 3.1, it ran on top of DOS 6.22.
Yeah.
So that might work just fine. Yeah, Jack is quite right. And he also suggests CodeWeavers. That's the company that is associated with Wine. So they give away this Wine program that's installed or installable on just about any Linux that's out there. But they also have a, quote, professional version that's CodeWeavers that they provide additional support. And what that really means is they have done the work to get some of these cranky applications to run a little bit better. And if you really want that, you got to pay for the CodeWeavers product.
By the way, Steve says he's listening, and he thanked us for that, so he's going to check that out. And I said,
I was about to say, I'm like, why are you in the chat room if you're listening live? Like, the conversation, it's riveting.
Okay.
It's fun to be in there, even if you're not listening, but we do encourage you to listen.
Yeah, we're a multimedia kind of show. We've got the chat room, we've got the live cheat notes, we've got the website, we got everything going here. We got streaming, audio, I mean, we got it all. You know, that's what we try to do here in Computer America. So, all right, so let's get back to some of the oddest places you would find Linux embedded.
Yeah, and other places right. besides embedded. So we'll take a look at this. So this is one of the links that we have. And this is, if you're looking at the links in the show notes, it's Julie Bort's Network World slideshow from 2010. So this is a couple of years old, but if you click on the link, it takes you right to the page. There may be some ads that pop up or whatever, but once you're there, you'll see this nice little penguin. And right. by the way, for the uninitiated, the penguin is the mascot of the Linux operating system,
right.
just like the window is the Windows mascot,
uh-huh.
and the Apple is the Apple mascot. So I guess, yeah, okay. Anyway, what we're going to do here is this is kind of a slideshow. And it's got 10 slides, the first one being this introductory slide, and there are a couple of little arrows in the upper right.
Right.
So we're just going to walk you through them. So if we click on that and go to slide number 2, the first place you're going to find Linux is on a...
motorcycle.
Linux motorcycle, yes. The Mavazen TTX-02, it says, is billed as the first electronic motorcycle with an onboard computer, USB ports, and an IP address. Mm-hmm. This lets the crew tune the bike over a WLAN, a WLAN,
right.
and can hit speeds of 130 miles an hour.
Yeah,
and it's all powered by a Linux system, according to Linux Pro Magazine.
Yeah. And that's without pedals, too. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no pedals involved. Yeah, yeah, uh-huh. nor training wheels, although it kind of looks like training wheels in that picture.
Yeah, it is. They're not training wheels. That's a stand, I guess, so it'll stand.
Yeah.
It actually lifts the rear wheel off the ground, too. It's actually tilted slightly, lifts it up. So that's kind of cool.
It's a cool-looking bike. It really is.
It is very, very cool. But it's all run by Linux.
It is.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure I'd want somebody tweaking my bike as I'm riding it at 130 miles an hour, but I guess, you know, that's each his own.
All right.
So the next one, if you click the next slide, you'll see it's got a cup of Linux in the morning. This is a coffee machine running Linux, a commercial coffee maker.
Yeah.
And it says it was on display in Embedded World in Nuremberg, Germany.
Yeah,
I'm guessing this was in 2010.
It was. Yeah, they actually have a convention around embedded world.
You
know? Okay.
Embedded world. Yes. Yes. Yeah. And there are plenty of things that have embedded computer operating systems in them.
Yeah.
And it says it runs on Linux and was built by built with the Qt framework. It's not available for consumers. Aw. But a few years ago, Linux Lover published instructions for building your own Linux coffee pot.
Yeah.
We say cheers to the penguin-inspired Java,
it says
in the article. So there you go. And they've even got a little foam cup that coffee's going into with the letters QT on it.
It actually looks like it has two streams of coffee going into the cup, too.
Yeah, I don't know whether that's coffee and milk or whether that's
you could put two
cups there and fill them both up.
Or just filling it up more quickly. I don't know.
But who knows? Yeah. But it's an impressive looking machine.
Yes,
it sure is.
Yes, it is.
Okay, the next one. Speaking of milk.
Oh, actually we're up against the break. So.
Okay, we'll wait.
So we'll wait. If you like milk...
stay tuned.
You're going to like this one.
That's a good outro.
Yeah, exactly. This is the Computer America Show. Larry Bushy continues on with us. It's the oddest places you will find Linux and 10 of the oddest Linux distributions. It's all coming up.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show. We have Larry Bush with us, and we're talking about all the strange places that you would find Linux. And, Old MacDonald had a farm. No. How'd it go? I had this whole thing prepared out, and I just completely blew it. Welcome back to the Computer America Show. Larry Bushy, milk, farm, Linux, do something with that, guys.
Well, I think what Ben
all right, I'll pick up the challenge. Yeah. Here we go.
And on that farm, he had a distribution of Linux to help milk his cows, E-I-E-I-O. There we go.
Close enough.
Yes,
all
it
right.
is. Well, I think what he's talking about is that evidently there Linux, this a version of Linux is found in the machines that milk cows.
Yes, there's a company that makes a robotic milking machine. The company's name is DeLaval. And this robotic milking machine runs on Linux and on Windows, but it runs on Linux. And it lets the farmer operate it via a wireless remote control. And so they say here that's what we call milking a free operating system, but that pun aside.
I thought it was the farmer who was just used Linux, you know, and it was milking.
You know, well, it could
Lars,
be penguin milk, I guess. I don't know.
Lars, the farmer, you know, there's a, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
No, okay.
Okay, moving right along. Slide number four.
I think for a joke that isn't there.
I think we've milked that
it's
one to a death.
Yes, we've milked everything out of that we can get. The next one is a little less funny. It's Linux in security systems, and it says Linux is watching you. Linux is the choice for the ZoneMinder home video camera surveillance system. And in fact, these days, most of the camera surveillance systems that I've seen in the stores are running Linux or some version of embedded Linux. It says ZoneMinder is an integrated set of applications for surveillance, capture, recording of any CCTV or security camera attached to a Linux-based machine. There is no limit to the number of cameras the app can support beyond what your Linux machine can handle.
All right, so...
So there you go. So if you want to spy on people breaking into your home, I guess that wouldn't really be spying, would it? So if you want to watch people break into your home, hopefully they're not, you can use Linux to do that. That was worse than the milking the cow thing. So. Next. Is this segment almost over?
Could be. Maybe the
so the next one is Linux involved with the postal system, and not in some strange foreign country, the U.S. postal system. It says Linux has gone postal. For the past decade, the U.S. Postal Service has relied on a mail sorting system that uses the Linux operating system at its heart. And if you really want to show Linux your love, you can also decorate your mail by using custom Linux themes stamps from Zazzle.com.
Oh, Zazzle. I like that. Yeah. They're going to be on the show next month, by the way.
Very good. And you can ask them about the Linux stamps when they're on.
Okay.
There you go. Okay. And this next one has some nice little penguins on the picture. It says, "Stop in the name of Linux." Can you guess what this is? No, it's not a song from the 70s. It is Linux at a red light. It says, take a moment to think geek the next time you're at a red light, or rather think peak. Peak traffic makes a series of Linux-based traffic lights that keeps traffic flowing in places like Iowa, New York, and on the 101 freeway in Los Angeles. So no small cities there.
No.
Okay.
But, you know, if you – does it look like the one that's in the picture that'll tell you that it's a Linux crosswalk guy?
I don't know whether the penguins come with it or not. You know, I think penguins not included.
Penguins not included. All right.
All right, next.
I don't know if you're talking about the actual shape of the – because I've never seen stoplights like that before myself.
Neither have I. But, I think that may be just an artist rendering.
Although the number is actually a countdown. It tells you how many seconds you have, you know, while you're in the
crosswalk. Oh, that's nothing new.
Yeah, and the little arrow is the directions. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about the invasion of the Linux bots.
Yes, there's Isamu is a company that's been credited with the first humanoid robot to run on Linux, making the rounds in about 2001. But since then, Linux has become a popular basis. I can read, really, I can, for all kinds of robots, including Pleo, an animatronic dinosaur toy, and the Katana robotic arm for industrial applications built by Neuronix. Are we getting, revenue share from these ads that we're giving people? Anyway, last but not least, this one I think is a bit of a stretch. Yes, it's a stretched T-shirt for your dog, and it has Linux on the T-shirt.
All these puns are flying. I'm
sorry. Yeah. So, yeah. So you can get your dog a T-shirt that says Linuxware or Linux Rocks or I'm a cute penguin or all that.
I like the one that says Am I cute or what?
Yeah. So you can get yourself one too at Think Geek, but this is not that. This is something else. This is Think Pet Geek, I guess. Anyway, that's it for oddest places to find Linux. I think we should move on to the oddest Linux distributions.
I think we should get one of these shirts for Zach, and when you take him to the dog park, man.
No, I actually respect myself and my dog.
Okay. Nothing against Linux. No. The T-shirts are a little
nothing wrong. Against Linux. It's against dressing up a dog.
Okay.
No, and some of them are small enough to act like they're little toys, but it's not here or there. So,
okay.
10 most exotic specialized Linux distributions.
Yes.
Yes, moving on. well segued.
Yes.
So this first one, by the way, this is the next link in our show notes link, mm-hmm. and this is also a slideshow. You click the little word next to go to the next slide. So this first one is a Linux distribution called Kane, C-A-I-N-E, and what makes it unusual is the fact that this is as the name is an acronym for Computer Aided Investigative Environment. It's a distribution for doing computer forensics, essentially. So it comes with a lot of utilities that helps with that could help with digital forensics on computers. There's an application called the Sleuth Kit, Autopsy Forensic Browser, Steganography Tools, and of course plenty of utilities for wiping hard drives. It also says this distribution also includes a semi-automated tool for the compilation of final report on a digital forensics investigation. Mm-hmm. So this is the kind of thing that lawyers might be contracting with a company using this to investigate what's on some bad guy's computer hard drive somewhere.
Well, again, it is interesting stuff. I see they've got the picture of the guy wearing the sunglasses. It looks like this guy from CSI or something, you know. But
I think that is him.
Could be.
It looks like him, doesn't it?
It does.
Yes.
It does.
Okay. CSI Miami, no doubt.
Yeah.
Okay, this next one, I don't think we can name it on broadcast radio, so what I'll just say is it's Darn Vulnerable Linux. And it's not darn,
all right.
Okay? But it's DVL.
Okay.
So DVL does exactly what it says on the tin, according to the write-up. It says, according to this distribution's website, DVL is everything a good Linux distribution isn't. Its developers have spent hours stuffing it with broken, ill-configured, outdated, and exploitable software that makes it vulnerable to attacks. Maybe it's got that Java exploit that came up on the news just before we started. It says, the idea behind this distribution is to train Linux administrators. And what better way to train someone than to hand them a broken distribution to fix?
There you go. Very nice. By the way, I figured it's not darned, it's dang. Dang. Vulnerable.
Yes,
okay.
All right.
You
get the idea.
You know, there's a lot to be said about that. They actually have seeding in applications. They put in bugs purposely to see if people will find them, because it usually leads them to finding other things that they didn't find. You know, not quite the same thing, but it's similar here. They purposely put malfunctions or bugs into the operating system, so people who are learning or training to support it will learn how to fix it. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
And to get a darn vulnerable version of Windows, all you'd have to do is remove the firewall and the antivirus software. Right. And there you go.
Yeah. It's not darn. It's dang. Okay.
Dang. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. We got another segment coming up here on the Computer America Show as we continue to talk about some of the oddest distributions of Linux. And we're certainly living up to it. So we'll be right back with more. Larry Bushy is our guest for both hours. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. Larry Bushy continues on with us. We're doing some of the 10 exotic specialized Linux distributions. It's part of our topic tonight, which are the oddest places you'll find it and some of the 10 oddest Linux distributions. Just a quick FYI for everybody. Firefox late last night went from to 19.0, version 19.0. So if you haven't updated, you should do so.
How did I miss that?
Yeah, I don't know. And they've added
I've been checking all the news sites. I've been looking everywhere. It's like, oh, yeah, new hand that lets people transplant hands and feel what they're feeling with bionic hands. And I missed the Firefox update. My bad.
Yes, you did. But, you know, they've added they added brand new, a built-in PDF viewer to it. And they have a number of things. They have a CSS add pages now supported and HTML5. They actually have a whole list of things that they've added or fixed. But the newest thing is a built-in PDF viewer. So if you don't have your Firefox set to it, you should have it so it checks for updates automatically. And if you haven't, then you just go to, you know, About Firefox, and then you can get the link there, and you can download it for yourself. In the meantime, just want to let you know. Okay, so Larry, we're continuing to do the oddest distributions, and this next one is called Zero Shell.
Yes, Zero Shell. Let me take a look at my notes here because I forget what this one is. It's aimed at embedded systems again. Okay, we talked about them earlier. And it's specifically for networking hardware. It's something that would be on a network attached storage or on a network system of some sort. It's administered through a web interface, so there isn't any desktop environment where you a graphical user interface, in other words, where you can log in, other than through a website. So it's a web interface that works in the browser. And as it says, it's designed for administrators, network administrators. It's got all kinds of things that would be of interest to them, HTTP proxy, wireless access points, host to LAN, VPN, LAN to LAN, VPN, XYZ, ABC, QRS, other letters of the alphabet. Yes.
So, anyway, if you find that intriguing, then Zero Shell is for you.
Yes, and the rest of us will just move on.
Yes.
And moving on, this next unusual, odd, if you will, distribution is called Parted Magic.
Yes.
Yes, sounds a little familiar, and it should.
Yeah.
It's used to partition hard drives, and it's got a bunch of other tools built in as well. It's similar to something called gparted live CD, which is a live CD that has partition editing software running on a Linux live CD. But Parted Magic adds a bunch more tools to it. CloneZilla is a program that's used for cloning hard drives, test disk, part image, TrueCrypt, something that's very cross-platform, G4L, it's the letter G, the number 4, and the letter L. It used to be called Ghost for Linux until they got sued, I think it was. But it is G4L, Super Grub Disk for putting your boot sector onto a Linux boot sector onto a hard drive, and DD Rescue, which is a disk copying or file copying or partition copying program. So lots of tools there.
Good.
Yeah, moving along to the next one, we have Tiny Core Linux.
Tiny Core.
As its name suggests, it is tiny. You can run this on 10 megabytes worth of storage. And it has a graphical user interface. It's not just a command line. It's got a graphical user interface. It's limited to tiny tasks because it's Tiny Core Linux. But If you want something that runs on a underpowered PC or a netbook or just something really old, this would be for you. Or if you've got a nice modern iCore 7 processor and 16 gigabytes of RAM, this thing will scream.
Yeah, we think so.
So it's very small. The next one is CAE Linux, computer-aided engineering. It's for all those engineering diagrams and building simulations, mm-hmm. wireframes of actual physical models of things. So if you're into computer-aided drafting or things like that, this might be the distribution of Linux for you.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you would think you would just get yourself like an Autodesk or something along those lines. Why would you want the operating system to support CAD as opposed to just an application for it?
Oh, well, you know what? Bear in mind that this is a distribution of Linux. In other words, it's an operating system prepackaged with the applications you need to do these functions. So it's Linux.
Yeah.
These are all Linux. Yeah. It's just that they have applications prepackaged for this specific task that you're interested in. So it's the same Linux that you would get in Ubuntu or Linux Mint or Fedora. It's the same Linux. It's just what applications are packaged with it. So if you're interested in saving a lot of money on your CAD program licenses, and you'd like something to be able to do some CAD for free, or you're just learning CAD/CAM software and you don't want to fork out that kind of money before you figure out whether this is something you want to do, this would be a good way to get experienced with some very professional-looking software that has a lot of the functions of AutoCAD, might not have a few that you're paying for when you pay for the license for AutoCAD.
Okay.
So it's just a way to run CAD software.
All right. Now, for this next one, I never promised you a rose garden, but evidently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's just on the wallpaper there. But Musix, M-U-S-I-X, is a Nopix Debian distribution. So it's based on Nopix, which, of course, is based on Debian. Mm-hmm. So you see how this works? It started as Debian, and then they derived Nopix from that, and then they derived Musix from that. That's kind of the way Linux works. You've got derivatives of derivatives of derivatives, and each one has a specialized purpose.
Right.
So but the nice thing is, if you know Debian or Nopix, you can probably run Musix without any trouble and use it for, as the name suggests, music.
Well, the two applications that draw the most attention on this distribution are Rose Garden and Ardor, which are two specialized music apps.
Yes, absolutely. And they're very, very good programs for producing music, if that's what you're into.
Yes. I don't know if we're going to have time to get to the last two here, but we'll try.
We're probably not, but, for those listeners who want to look at the rest of them, go to the show notes, click on the links, click through here, and you'll see the remaining few. So things like Slamp. With a name like that, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. But you can see them all at computeramerica.com. There's even one there for Christians, and Linux for Christians. Hey, you know, we might touch on that when we come back. This is Computer America. Okay. We'll be right back with more. Stay with us.
You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And we continue on. It's our all-Linux show. Larry Bushy continues on with us. Welcome back to hour two, Larry.
Thank you.
And just a quick heads up while I was sitting here, I announced that the Firefox version 19 is up. But guess what? And there's a new version of iTunes just came out. So it's updated. It's 11.0.2. So if you use iTunes for both Windows and Mac, you need to update that. And also, Java 10.6 update 13. Yeah. Not another Java. Oh, gosh. Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. So,
yeah, I guess we need it.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyhow, We were doing this topic, the oddest places you'll find Linux, and of course, 10 of the oddest Linux distributions. And we got through most of them, but there was a couple. There was one more I wanted us to go through. So let's finish this up.
Yeah, there's a couple right at the end here. So let's hit the last two. The first of the last two is something called Ubuntu Christian Edition.
Okay. It has a little fish on it, yeah.
Exactly. It's got a little fish, yeah. And it says it's an Ubuntu-based Linux distribution geared towards the Christian faith. Mm-hmm. This distribution includes a plethora of faith-based software, such as Xyphos? I don't know. OpenSong and eSword, along with tools for parental controls. And a lot of those parental control utilities are available for other Linux distributions as well, but they come by default on the Ubuntu Christian Edition.
Now, do you think, do they make a Jewish edition of this? Or
I haven't seen one, but Hindu? You never know.
Yeah, exactly.
If they had one, I would definitely call it Jubuntu.
Jubuntu. Okay.
How did I know that was coming?
It fits so well. How did you know?
It does.
It works. It's amazing. Okay.
All right. So the last one.
Yeah.
We got to have the last one now. Since we did the Christian edition, this one is Ubuntu Satanic Edition.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's not what you think.
No?
No. It's not the opposite of the Christian edition. It is for heavy metal fans.
Ah, okay.
Yes, and that's where that comes in. So if you're a heavy metal fan, this has a dark theme and heavy metal themes. And it says it's got a full 50-minute album of the best Creative Commons licensed metal music. Mm. For you already pre-installed.
Okay.
Well,
so there you go.
If you're into that,
yeah.
This is the distribution for you.
Okay, so they are the 10 most oddest places you'll find Linux and the 10 most oddest places of the Linux distribution, Linux distributions. And there you go.
Yep.
All right. So now what we're going to do is we're going to change gears and we're going to move into our email version for Computer America. And this is emails that Larry receives regarding Linux, and he picks the ones that he feels may be most appropriate. Some mention Computer America, some don't, but that's okay. We want to find the ones that he feels will be of the most value to you, and we're kind of all over the road. And we start this first one from Ian, who listens to you in Slovakia. Okay, Larry, did we lose you?
Skype's acting up.
Skype is acting up. Okay. Well, we got to call Larry again. Oh, all right. Let's get Larry back on, and I'll try to call him and see if I can get him back in.
Yeah, there we go.
There we go. Now I think I just lost Ben, so now I need to.
Yeah, Skype is doing its thing again.
let me add Ben to the call, and we'll get him back. And I'm sure he'll be back.
Maybe there's a new version of Skype we should be downloading too.
We'll get Ben back on. Hopefully. Well, why don't you? I'll tell you what. Why don't we start reading this first from Ian? I'm trying to get Ben and.
Okay, we'll let him join as he can.
As he can, yes, exactly.
Yeah, all right. So our first email is from Ian.
Okay.
Who spells his name J-A-N, but it's pronounced Ian. He's from Slovakia, and he's provided our first email. And I've edited this one for clarity. English is not his first language, and so I've done a little editing, Ian. Sorry, but I've tried to make it a little easier for me to read. So hopefully I can do this. It says, "Hi, Larry and Tom." Tom being my co-host, of course, one of my two co-hosts. "I am 28-year-old Linux guy from Slovakia, big fan of your show. I've been listening to Going Linux and also the Linux Action Show for more than 2 years. I can always find some really useful information in every show. I have been running on Linux for more than 5 years. Step by step, I learned how to do raster and vector graphics using GIMP and Inkscape. Then I learned the command line, basic commands in Bash, then reading and modifying scripts. Now I do websites running on Drupal 7. I try to evangelize Linux wherever possible. I run Linux on 3 computers at home, Lubuntu on two of them, and Linux Mint Cinnamon on the other one. When I installed Linux on my friend's computer, they were quite satisfied. One was not okay that the games were not working as he was used to on Windows, and another did not like that I could not find appropriate printer and webcam drivers. Both printer and webcam were cheap ones and old ones as well. But they noticed their computers ran faster and used fewer resources, such as CPU or RAM.
Mm-hmm.
My neighbor asked me to look at his laptop. Windows Vista was not working properly. I installed Lubuntu. He surprised me. He has just a little computer experience and zero English skills. Mm-hmm. He liked everything on his Lubuntu computer, that it just worked, and he loves having it in his native language, Slovak. I did the dual boot, of course, but he never chooses to boot to Windows. His words. Mm-hmm. What I expected to work for my friends did not work for them. What I just speculatively tried for my neighbor amazingly worked. My question, I want to spread Linux to the friend whose main objection against computers and the internet in general is insecure content. He does not want to see any ads, especially those with sexual content. He would like to go to sites trusted by him for sure, but he would like to block all the others. Could you give me any advice as to which distributions may be targeted for such specific group of users as him, or is it just about some firewall settings? Mm-hmm. Thank you for doing such great work, for sharing your views and skills of Linux.
There you go. Okay.
Okay. So, Ian, to answer your question, first of all, I'd like to point out that Slovak is one of those languages I don't think that you can get Windows in. that just kind of highlights one of the points about Linux, that is that it is developed by its users. And, of course, there are Linux users in Slovakia, and many of them are computer developers, and those computer developers who work on Linux there have translated the Linux desktop operating system into the Slovak language so that people in Slovakia can run an operating system in their native language without having to learn a foreign language just to run their computers.
Are you saying that there's no Slovak version of Windows?
I am not absolutely sure, but from the way this guy is talking, absolutely. Mm. However, I don't know about the Slovak language in particular, but I do know that Linux is available in many, many more languages than Windows is, primarily because there are many developers of Linux. As I said, it's developed by its users, unlike Windows, which is developed by a select group of people who work for Microsoft in Redmond, Washington. Mm. And those people may or may not speak every possible language that's in the world, but I can almost guarantee you that just about every country that's out there has somebody that's working on some portion of Linux, and some of them are translating things for the Linux desktop. Okay, and so to answer his question about securing content or providing filters for secure content in Linux, yeah, that Ubuntu Christian Edition we were just talking about might be a good choice for you. It comes prepackaged with a lot of the privacy filters that you're talking about, but in the show notes I have a link to something called Dan's Guardian, and Dan's Guardian is one of those things that might help you out. We can talk about that after the break.
Okay. And, Ben, we got you back, don't we?
Yes, you do.
Oh, good.
This is the Computer America Show. We'll be right back with more right after this. Okay, we're continuing on. It's our All Linux Show with Larry Bushy, and we're in our email section of the show. By the way, if you want to call us, you can. Toll free 866-606-TALK. Email live at computeramerica.com, our chat room at computeramerica.com, or Skype is our Skype address, one word, Computer America. Let's go all the way over to England and talk to David, who sent you an email.
Okay, before we do that, I just wanted to mention that for our previous emailer, Ian, I just wanted to finish up on Dan's Guardian, that software talking about. We'll have a link in the show notes to the website, dansguardian.org. If you have Linux running, you don't need to go to their website to download it. Just go to the Software Center or whatever your distribution has for installing software. It'll be there. It's one of the most popular software programs out there, and it's designed for protecting children from bad websites, but you can adjust those filters any way you like so that you can allow some websites in that might be a little more mature, not necessarily risque, but maybe a little more mature that you wouldn't want children to have, but are okay for adults. And that would be what I would recommend if you're not going to go with a specific distribution like the Ubuntu Christian Edition. Okay. So you don't have to install a whole different distribution just to get some protection from bad websites.
All right.
Okay.
So let's go to David in England.
David in England, he says, "Hello, chaps." Mm-hmm. What a strange greeting for someone from England. But anyway, he says, "We have a bit of snow here in England, which means that I've had plenty of time to catch up on your splendid podcast. I've been using Linux for about, I have been using Linux for about 5 years now. After umpteen years of Windows operating system, I started with Ubuntu, but now I use mainly Pingai OS with Lubuntu on an older laptop. I recommended Zorin OS for a distribution for Linux newbies. One application I have trouble with is Audacity. About every 6 months or so, I do some research on the internet in an attempt to get Audacity to record streaming audio, but without success. The best I have been able to do is to make a recording via my laptop's microphone, but obviously the sound quality is not as good as using the internal line-in connection. Mm-hmm. I wonder if one day you could produce a podcast to explain how to set up Audacity on Linux. Thanks in anticipation, and thank you for your excellent work." Mm-hmm. So, David, you must be a new listener to the Going Linux podcast. We have had several episodes on how to use Audacity. In fact, we have three videos that we've recorded on how to use Audacity. So, back in 2009, we created a basic one. This was our first screencast called Using Audacity to Record an Audio Podcast, and our second in that same year was Using Audacity to Edit an Audio Podcast. I have recently remastered those, primarily because when I did them back in 2009, I was absolutely awful at using video editing software and did a really lousy job of editing those together and getting a clear image on the screen. So they're much better now. And this year, back in January, I produced the third screencast on using Audacity to edit multi-track audio. So we have some audio episodes as well as these three videos to help you out with using Audacity. But I actually had emailed back and forth a couple of times with David, and it turns out that his problem was very, very simple. He has come from a Windows background and was using Audacity on Windows. And although Audacity is, for the most part, exactly the same on Windows, Mac, and Linux, there are a couple of quirks in the way Audacity uses the sound in Linux as compared with in Windows. Now, which way is right depends on which way you're coming from. But it's just that the sound system is implemented differently in Windows than it is in Linux. So neither one is right, neither one is wrong. It's just different.
Yeah.
So in Windows, you use the audio input selector in Audacity, and that will switch the Windows audio input as well. Now, Linux being Linux, they allow you to tweak everything every which way but loose. Okay, so...
Wasn't there a song when, that way?
Yeah, there's got to be a song
or
in
a movie
somewhere.
Or so, yeah.
Yeah. So what you do in Linux is you set your Linux audio settings first, then you can go into Audacity and select the audio from there. So what he was doing is he was trying to select his audio input from Audacity without setting it up in the Linux sound control panel application first. Once I explained that to him, he went and made that adjustment, and then he was able to record no problem. Like I said, just a different way of working.
All right. Well, there you go. And yep. And that makes perfect sense. Hey, by the way, I just wanted to mention something here that I had neglected to mention, and this was actually pointed out by Ben. But Larry, I don't know if you know this, you are 2 months shy of being on the Computer America show for 5 years.
Isn't that amazing?
5 years. Wow. Hey, congratulations.
And you've stuck it through.
I have. You've put up with me for this long.
Hey, we'll be right back with lots more. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network.
It's 35 minutes past the hour. This is the Computer America Show. Larry Bushy is still with us, and we're doing emails. And did you have David's email about Audacity licked, or did you have something else to add to that?
No, I think that's about it. He's got it up and running now, and he's happy, so I'm happy.
Yeah, and again, congratulations on your 5 years with us, Larry.
5 years. Amazing, amazing, amazing.
Time flies.
Yeah, and yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, your coffee cup is in the mail.
Oh, thank you. All right. Yeah. I also have to say that as far as the Going Linux podcast is concerned, when we rebroadcast this Computer America episode, it will be episode number 199.
Wow.
And so our 200th episode, we've got a special surprise for our listeners. Mm-hmm. not anything super huge or flashy or fireworks or anything like that, but it's a little different kind of show.
Okay, good.
Yeah, Bill and I are going to do some reminiscing on the old days in podcasting.
Larry's
back in 2004.
Okay.
The old days.
The old days.
It's hard to think that was almost a decade ago.
Yeah amazing.
Almost. I'm old.
So, we're all getting that way, Ben. We're all getting that way. So moving along, I think, to Chris's emails. Chris notes that our count is off. So, yeah, I'll have a comment after that. Hello, guys. He says, I just wanted to drop you a quick line to say congrats on the upcoming and by now seemingly inevitable episode number 200. This is a tremendous accomplishment, and I commend each of you for all you have done for the Linux community over the years. I recently made an interesting, and arguably pointless, observation while going back through some old episodes. Larry's first appearance on the Computer America show occurred between episodes 28 and 29. Mm-hmm. Between episodes 28 and 29. That episode does not have a number, but the future appearances do. As I write this episode, the next episode to be released is episode 198, Listener Feedback. But technically speaking, shouldn't that actually be episode 199? It's about as important as a single hair on my head, I suppose, but it did trigger my OCD for a moment. Again, thanks for the great and informative show. I like the pragmatic approach you guys take. I think it goes over well for the intended audience. I am also amazed that you are still able to come up with topics for discussion after all these years. How do you do it? Keep up the great work. I'll be looking forward to episode 198, or is it 199? Ah! So we didn't number that episode. It was just special.
Yeah, who's counting?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I wasn't sure whether you were going to have me back after the first, you know, appearance on the show. I mean, look what happened to your last Linux guy. So I didn't number it.
We did feed him to the jackals, and yes. So far you have escaped that fate. So
yes,
good on
yes.
you.
But I'm always looking over my shoulder. But thanks, guys. It's been fun.
Yes.
For 5 years.
Yeah.
All right.
And counting.
So go ahead. What was that?
And
I think our audience knows something about Linux.
Yes.
Yeah, a little bit.
I think they have. Yeah, exactly.
And if they didn't when they started listening, they certainly know it now.
Yes, they did.
Okay. So next, Scott provides us some feedback. He says, I just listened to your last podcast and wanted to let you know I am new to Linux. I have heard of it, but have an SD card that went bad. I saw you could recover the pics and videos off it using Linux. My camera couldn't read the card. Windows could not either. But Linux was able to salvage most pics off the SD card. It took about 5 hours, but at least saved my data.
There you go. That's a nice story.
It is, and that just illustrates that there are plenty of utilities that are available for Linux that read files, restore files, undelete files, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. There are utilities out there for doing that and doing all kinds of other things as well that sometimes you can do on Windows and Mac and sometimes you can't.
And recovering data from an SD card is completely different than recovering data off of a hard disk drive. It's a totally different technology. So.
Yeah, so I understand. I'm certainly no expert at that, but I do know that Linux has tools for doing both.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Okay.
Gary sent you this Gone Linux story.
Yes. So we ask our audience to provide us with, their experience with Linux. They ask questions from now, from time to time. But when we get a story that talks about how they have converted from another operating system, to Linux, we call it a Gone Linux story. Get it? Going, yeah. Linux, gone. It's been 5 years, guys.
Yeah.
You should get it by now. Okay,
yeah.
Anyway. I found your podcast about 2 months ago, and I have been listening and assimilating as much as I can about Linux ever since. I am up to episode 137 today. Got a little ways to go there, Gary, mm-hmm. And quickly catching up. Listening on the way to work and back each day, an hour each way. I have been using Windows since DOS 6.22 and have been working in the IT support industry since 2000. I have tried Linux a number of times in the past for personal use, but always had issues with hardware drivers or something and always went back to Windows. I work with Windows every day, of course, as this is what pays the bills. However, I have been displeased with Microsoft for some time now, and after coming across your podcast on iTunes, my interest in Linux has been rekindled. So even though I make my living off of supporting Microsoft Windows OS, at home I decided to try going Linux as much as possible. Mm-hmm. I'm currently multi-booting Windows 7, Ubuntu 12.04, and Linux Mint 14.1, using Ubuntu as my main desktop operating system, and learning my way around both Linux distributions. I am grateful for all the hard work and time you guys put into the podcast. It has been very helpful to my migration, and I don't think I would have done it without you guys. I am probably 90% Linux now, and only boot into Windows when I can't get a program to run natively in Linux or in Wine. The more I use Linux, the more I like it and how much faster it is than Windows 7 on the same hardware.
Hmm. Okay. So there's really no question here. You just wanted to let you know that he likes
using Linux. He's converted over to Linux and uses Windows only when he has to. That's kind of the way most of us have grown into Linux, quite frankly.
Yeah.
So thanks for that.
There you go. Okay. All right. So then let's move over to Kevin. Email. He has comments on upgrading your computer to Linux.
Yes. So he writes, Larry, Tom, and Bill. Hi, guys. Still loving your show. Larry really liked your solo piece on upgrading your laptop. I would appreciate a bit of advice or direction on upgrading my systems. I have two Dell computers. This laptop is an 8-year-old Dell D610, purchased cheaply to learn Linux. I like it, and with CrunchBang stable running, it works quite well, though I want better graphics support. LibreOffice Draw operates quite clunky, and I use it often. Mm-hmm. The second is an Inspiron 546 desktop, single-core AMD processor, Windows 7, even worse graphics and video than the laptop running Windows. Mm-hmm. A dual boot it with whatever distro I have chosen to play with on occasion. I want to set up a home theater, eliminate cable TV once both kids are off to school, off to college, he says, and a NAS box or similar to access music and files from my phone or wife's Kindle. I don't see upgrading the D610, though I would keep it running, keep it around, and I am not ready to spend heavily on a new laptop just yet. Is it possible to get the home audio theater and NAS out of a single system? Mm-hmm. I will still need to access Windows for a few items. Work will require it, as well as some banking. I will be thrilled if you can point me in the right direction here, as I need to do some planning to make this work. Keep up the great work, and thanks in advance for any and all advice.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay, so some information on how to make this thing a server slash audio thing slash access things on other devices on your network. There are plenty of ways to do that. If your focus is on an entertainment system, there are things like Mythbuntu, a distribution designed to be a TV and audio entertainment center, if you will. There are other audio entertainment systems. There are distributions of Linux that are specifically for network-attached storage. And most of it, you can combine all onto a single system. The challenge you're going to have is with these older systems, they may not have the power to run everything simultaneously.
Okay. Well, there you go. All right. When we come back, we'll look at this with Steve. He's got some more issues with Audacity. And this is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. It's all Linux. We have time maybe for one more email, so which would you like to read?
Okay, well, we said Steve. Let's read Steve. We'll talk about Audacity again. He has found some value in my recent video tutorial that I mentioned earlier on using some of the advanced editing features of Audacity. He says, hi, guys. Another great episode, especially as I'm about to try to help someone to use Linux to archive some audio tapes. I'm not an expert in this field, just more expert than him in Linux. At one point in the show, one of you said that if Android doesn't play it, you don't use it. I'm sure there are more direct ways to do this, but BlueStacks is a tool on Windows to effectively run Android apps. It might help someone to know that. Bit worried that you may be slipping back into Windows bashing. Don't. I think Microsoft needs all the help it can get. There's a little Windows bashing for you. I can't see them winning in the mobile space or the embedded space or the server space, and desktops are dying. Even in the gaming space, Linux via Steam and Ouya and others are coming in at £40 or so. So you can plug in a small Android device or Raspberry Pi devices to get TV and get a perfectly good computing experience. Keep up the good work, Steve, from the UK.
Yeah.
The £40 was the giveaway there.
You know, since you actually wrote these out, and since he actually wrote that email, the Steam for Linux actually came out.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
I remember the story, yes.
And have you tried it, Ben?
I have Steam already. Unfortunately, I use Windows. I don't use Linux, but I use the Steam platform anyways.
Has your brother tried it?
You know, I haven't even told him about it, and he...
Oh, no!
He usually doesn't keep up on that kind of thing, and I will definitely tell him about it. I know he's used the Steam platform before, and Steam is very, very easy to use, so...
Yeah, we should get him to try it and then report back on it, you know, how he
I don't like talking to that kid. He thinks he knows everything. He doesn't.
If he's not radio shy, you know, he could come on and be a guest on the next
we could
Linux
do that.
Episode.
And he can talk about Steam, absolutely.
Exactly. Exactly. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there it is.
That would be great.
I'm not liking where the conversation's going at all.
I don't know. Ben, you're
You haven't
been here for 5 years like me.
Yeah. you keep your successors at arm length, and then you don't have to worry about anything.
Boy.
Okay. All right.
Well, Larry, so what's coming up next on the Going Linux podcast? Is it going to be – was episode 199? What's it going to be?
Yeah, so the next one will be episode 200, and that will be our special super-duper edition with the fireworks – or no, without the fireworks and all that. Bill and me sitting back reminiscing about old times on, you know, Linux and podcasting and those kinds of things. So
don't forget,
stay tuned.
Don't forget to mention Computer America in those reminiscences.
All right. We'll see what we can do. We've actually already recorded it. I don't remember whether we mentioned Computer America or not.
Right. All right. Well, listen, thanks, Larry.
At the very end, you mean 3 seconds, like, and Computer America.
That's right.
Oh,
you, can just, patch that in.
Insert it to the episode right at the end. Exactly. And don't forget Computer America.
All right. Hey, Larry, thanks so much. Always been a pleasure. And
my pleasure.
And we will see you next month on the 19th. Yeah, the 19th, okay? We will see you there.
Sounds good.
For more Linux. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. Thanks, Larry.
Good night.
Good night. Good night. Bye-bye. All right, and that about wraps up the Computer America show. Coming up on tomorrow night, we're going to have our correspondent, Michael Miller, is going to be talking with us. He wants to talk about the Microsoft Surface RT and Pro and the, kind of take it from there and why people are choosing the Surface instead of the iPad or the Nexus or whatever. So we're going to talk about that. It's all... He's our, one of our correspondents, and he will be with us here for both hours. And, of course, we'll have a Facebook winner of the week, too. All right? So that about wraps it up for tonight. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. We'll see you tomorrow night.
What's a floppy?
There you go.
By popular demand.
Yes.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.